This episode of the podcast is sponsored by Agency 360. You can find them at www.agency360.com. Their customizable web-based field training software supports the CTO program and the onboarding of new dispatchers across the country to improve consistency, access, and efficiency in documenting their training.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them.
Good afternoon, this is Ricardo with the Code 7 Podcast Network, and this is going to be episode 88 of Within the Trenches podcast. This episode is sponsored by Agency 360. You can find them at www.agency360.com. Their customizable web-based field training software supports the CTO program and the onboarding of new dispatchers across the country to improve consistency, access, and efficiency in documenting their training. Now, it's been about a week since I did my last episode, and the last episode I did was actually it was pretty long. It was just over 2 hours. So if you listen to it, you got to learn a lot more about me. I went through my entire story of how I got started, and actually it was based off a talk that I've been giving a couple conferences. The first time was just this past September, and it was called Keep Broadcasting Your Message. It was one that I did for the 911 for 911 conference, and they do have another one coming up this September. I believe it's on the 18th or 19th. You'll have to check it out. It's 901for911.com. But this talk that I gave, I also gave it at Indiana NINA, their conference, and it was awesome. And I'm thinking of going to some different conferences and doing the same thing, just telling my story. It's more of a motivational, inspirational type thing to let people know that there's, even though dispatching is an awesome job, there's also more out there beyond it if you want to strive for it. So it's excellent. If you get a chance, check out that episode 87. Now, today I'm going to be talking with Teresa from Greenville City PD, and that's out of Greenville, South Carolina, about training new dispatchers. And we hope to come away with some ideas and ways that we can improve your onboarding of new communications officers. She's also going to be sharing her 911 story, so this is going to be awesome. How's it going?
Going good. How about you?
You know, I'm doing all right. I'm actually sitting in what's, I guess, going to be now my my little mini studio here where I work. I have a cubicle, but we have these silent cubes in the back over here. And I guess because I have it as my studio for podcasting, it's not exactly silent anymore.
Not at all.
Yeah. I don't even know how many people can hear me outside of this area, but you know, it's almost time for the shift to be over, and it's Friday. So, that should be good. But, you know, even though it is Friday, do you have to work this weekend?
No, I am off this weekend, so I get to enjoy my family.
Oh, awesome. Very nice, because if you're listening to this for the first time and don't know, dispatchers don't always get time off. And especially a whole weekend off.
Definitely.
To start out with, you know, what agency do you work for and how long have you been working there?
Well, I do work for Greenville City Police Department. I'm going on 3 years this week. Mm-hmm. Let's see, we're a smaller agency. We run about 25 to 30 dispatchers at a time. And
did you say at a time?
Or no, not at a time. I mean, total.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, holy cow, that's a lot of people.
I am one of the night shift dispatchers.
Oh, okay. And, gotcha.
We do work 12-hour shifts, so it is a very busy night for us.
Yeah, I worked midnight shift as well for the time that I was dispatching. And I don't know about you, but I ended up having to work mornings at one time when I made supervisor for 6 months. I had to work mornings, and it was not the same as working nights. It was actually kind of boring. Sorry,
yes,
for those people
definitely
that work morning shift. But I would rather work nights all the time, because that's when the best
definitely
stuff happens.
We always say that during the day shift, you're a secretary. At nighttime, you can actually dispatch.
That's right. That's when all the kick-ass stuff happens.
Yes. Definitely.
So you said 12-hour shifts. So we did the same thing. What are your 12-hour shifts, though? Like the time, I mean.
We start at 7. It goes from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. And we get there a little bit early for roll call.
Right.
Our dispatch center, we dispatch not only for police, but we also dispatch for fire as well.
Nice.
So keeps us busy.
Yeah. See, and we did it the same way. I mean, we did phones, you know, of course, and then EMS, right. Fire and police. We had, did everything. So it was always fun. There was always stuff going on. There was never a dull moment. And our 12-hour shifts, though, at least for me, because I was a supervisor for dispatch, it was 5 to 5. But because I was a supervisor, I had to come in at 4:30. So.
Oh.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was good when I finally went back to nights, but when I started out in on mornings, it was 4:30 in the morning to 4:30 in the afternoon. And I remember fighting my sleep coming home.
Yes.
Because, I mean, you go into that like tunnel vision. And
yes, you do.
It would freak me out every time because I would know where I was at, but I would get to a point and then kind of snap out of it and think, did I get this far? Like that,
yes.
That sucks.
Exactly. And then you sit there, how did I get home? Right. I don't remember driving home.
Yeah. I used to tell my wife all the time, she'd say, so how was the day? I was like, you know, it was all right. How was the drive home? You know, I don't remember it.
I got home. That's a good thing. So.
Yeah, exactly. I checked the car when I pulled in and there wasn't anything messed up on it. So we're good to go.
Exactly. Exactly.
So why did you become a dispatcher? Like, what was it that really motivated you?
Well, before I got into dispatching, I was working at a hospital in the laboratory. I worked there for almost 5 years at one laboratory and for a while at another. My husband is a highway patrolman. So we nice. Have law enforcement in our family already.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually came home frustrated one day with his dispatch. And he made a comment. He says, you know, they need people like you who can multitask, who can remember things and keep up.
Right.
Cool. And at that time, some things were going on with my other job. I was starting to just really get frustrated and just really needed a change. And so I told him, I says, well, you know, I'll just throw my application out there. You know, it's no big deal. If I get it, great. If I don't, okay.
Right.
And I didn't really know what a dispatcher was or what they even did until I started talking to some of his coworkers and finding out from them, you know, what goes on. And the more I started finding out, the more I just really started getting excited that this was an opportunity. And right. when my boss called me and said, hey, come down, take the test and go through the application process, I just got really excited and I've loved it since then.
That's awesome. So what was your hiring process like then?
It was a long hiring process.
Oh yeah.
Probably, let me see. We started in February and I actually started working in June. So the 5 months, going through things like your medical exam, your psych evaluation.
Holy crap.
Going through, you have to take your a test to begin with to see how your skills are.
Right.
Then you go in and our dispatch center makes us go in and observe for a couple hours so you can actually see what it's like before you finish the application process and get an understanding of it before you actually get far.
Oh, okay. So, that's good then because you got to have that. You have to have them thrown in there to, you know, see and, what's going on.
Exactly. And a lot of people, like you said before, they don't know what dispatch is. So they think, oh, this sounds like a cool job. I'll apply. And they don't really understand the fast pace. They don't understand some of the stress that is in a dispatch center at a time.
Right.
So it really opens your eyes to that.
So then from sitting in there, how long did you say that you had to sit in there?
We have to sit in there for 2 hours.
2 hours. Okay, cool.
I think we lost track of time and I ended up about 4 hours, but...
Hey, that's always a good sign because we would have people do the same thing, come in to check it out, and you could tell like right on their face, you know, I don't think this is going to work. But then you've got those like you that stayed there almost 4 hours and you're like, this is going to be awesome. They're going to do good. But, you know, you also have that time where you have someone come in and then nothing happens.
Yes, exactly.
Now, was there a lot of stuff going on when you went in?
There was a lot of stuff going on. Most of it, I had gone in the afternoon, so it was a lot of things like your accidents, people going home from work.
Oh, yes.
Just your little things, nothing major going on. Mm-hmm. But I knew enough what law enforcement did with my husband being
right
in that, so that helped.
Yeah, so it wasn't a lot of shocking stuff going on. It was more, you're in the mix.
Exactly.
That's cool. So then... why do they, well, I guess I'm going to ask this because when I went through my hiring process, they didn't give us a psych evaluation, but
we always say that you have to be a little bit crazy to work in dispatch.
That is very true.
So if you fail the psych eval, you don't have to worry because that's what they're looking for.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, we said if we all have to go through the psych evaluation now, none of us would pass it.
Oh man, that's pretty funny.
But
yeah, I didn't have to take one and mine or anything. We just had like the typing test, a written test, a panel interview, and you know, in that interview, they were just throwing questions out over and over and over and over and over.
Right.
And it was crazy. Was that something similar to what you had to do for your interview? Did they have were there people throwing questions at you just to see how you would, you know, do under pressure?
My interview was with one of the captains and the administrator, and they were actually very nice. They didn't throw out a lot of questions, but they did make you think a lot to see how you processed things. So I think in that way it was really good.
And then from all of that, it took 5 months.
It took 5 months. Oh, and then you have your lie detector test in there too.
Oh, no way. You had a lie detector test as well?
Yes.
Holy cow.
And you just feel guilty sitting there. It doesn't matter what he asks. You just feel guilty.
Right, exactly. I mean, man, that's crazy. I feel nervous right now, and I didn't even have to go through that process. That's craziness. But, you know, you got through it, and you were good to go, so that's awesome.
I was.
Oh, that's good. So 5 months. Sheesh. I can't get over that. So then, okay, so you go through all that and then you start your training. What was your training like? Like, what did that encompass? Like those first couple of weeks, was it just you sitting down with your trainer and learning like the maps and the roads and such? Or how did that work out for you?
Actually, I spent the first 2 weeks going through with our assistant administrator, and she would go over a lot of your policies and procedures and, a lot of the paperwork and the book work. And then we went from there. Our agency requires us to take APCO Fire. And then we take basic APCO as well as our NCIC training. So the first couple weeks are spent doing a lot of your training, preparing yourself for getting out to the floor. Then from there, we go into our basic call taking training mm-hmm. On the floor. And the way our agency works is they try to keep us with the same trainer for 2 months so that you have a time to adjust to them and get used to them. It's kind of nice because otherwise you jump from trainer to trainer. You really don't know what to expect.
Right.
You don't know what to do. And then they try to switch you a couple months on day shift and then switch you over to night shift because of the difference between your day shift and your night shift calls. Mm-hmm.
Which then we both know.
Yes, exactly. Once you get the phones down, they start integrating in what's called our backup radio, which is a lot of your administrative items on the radio, things like running people NCIC, gotcha. Doing a lot of, you know, calling the tow company, doing this for the officer, anything that's not major, they try to bring over to what is called our backup radio for that person to do. Mm-hmm. To try to keep most of the traffic off of main radio.
Gotcha.
So then you go from there and then you learn main radio and then you go from there to learn fire radio.
How did you like main radio?
I love main radio.
That is the same way.
That's one of my favorite places, is sitting main radio. But then at the same time, I like sitting the position that's our NCIC position as well. So those are probably my two favorite.
Now, is that position more of like a backup? So I guess let me explain that better. In my center, we had five consoles, or five positions rather. And on one side was main radio. And next to that one was our lean position, which is, you know, the same thing as like running NCIC and all that good stuff. And that position, if somebody at radios was to get up to go get something from the kitchen, they were backup radios. If somebody on phones got up, they were backup phones. So that position was everything, which was always really fun, especially in the summertime. You know, they've got the stuff for, you know, clicker ticket and all that other crap going on. It's like, yeah, going. By the time you're done, the shift is over.
For most of during your weekdays, it's going to be backup radio where you do relieve radios and things like that. You also take care of doing any entries into the NCIC that need to be done, sending hits, all that comes along with that. But then on the weekends, it also becomes a main radio for our downtown units. They call it our downtown task force. Mm-hmm. They could have anywhere from about 10 to about 20 people downtown patrolling the downtown area. So you're basically your own radio.
Oh, wow.
And that gets a little intense sometimes.
I can
imagine.
Because
they have a lot of activities downtown.
Right.
Keeps us busy.
Well, that's always good. You know, being busy is definitely good. But I'm right there with you. My main love was radios. I mean, I dug phones as well and taking all the calls in. You know, my favorite calls were, and it's weird for anybody who's not, you know, hasn't been in dispatching or whatever to hear that. What's your favorite call? Well, mine were like the domestics, the higher profile calls. You know, because I was doing more, I was able to help more. But but on main radios, I was always all about doing, you know, the chase calls and you know, high priority traffic, all that stuff. That was the best. That stuff I miss.
Yes, definitely, I agree with you there.
Now, do you ever joke on the radio, or do you guys have a pretty strict policy?
We don't joke on the radio, but we joke a lot about our radio traffic. For instance, I'll give you an instance. I am known as the person who cannot tell time. Because
that's funny.
all of our radio traffic is time stamped. Well, one day I was typing at the same time that I was talking. Mm-hmm. And what I was typing came out. So instead of giving the time, my time came out as 27:92.
Oh, nice.
So I'm always giving the wrong time like that. And so that's kind of become a joke on our shift. And with some of the officers, they're like, oh, Teresa's on the radio, because we don't know what time it is. So, I mean, things like that.
That's good stuff. See, and I was asking because I started doing the meow thing from like Super Troopers. So every now and then we would throw in a meow.
We would probably not get away with that. But I know I've heard stories from people who have been there for a while, and they used to do things like that and play songs on the radio and things like that.
See, and my team, when we worked, well, like I said, midnight shift, when we worked that, I mean, we would around 2:30, 3 o'clock, you know, it's kind of dying down and we're trying to stay awake. So we would throw on music and just start singing. Sometimes we would key up on purpose just so that people could hear us. But yeah, it was always fun. I mean, you gotta stay awake somehow, right?
Exactly.
Oh man. So what about like your first call? Do you remember what your first call was?
I do. My first call was a suspicious person call. Mm-hmm. And it was a lady riding a bike wearing only red boots.
What?
Yes.
Wow.
That was my very first call, and I just sat there and looked away. Really? And then to top it off, my second call was people getting argumentative over who was going to keep a squirrel.
Oh my gosh.
So I just sat there and said, yeah, I'm going to love this job.
Yeah. Cause I mean, where else is that going to happen? I mean, that's stuff that you can't make up. It's
Exactly.
That's just the best. You know, you get a call like that, and what I would always do is I would cover up the phone, and I would turn away, and I would just start busting up laughing. And my partner on phones with me would say, "What kind of call do you have?" And I would say, "Just monitor my call so that you can listen." And
yes.
You know, we would be chuckling and stuff. And of course, not emergency, you know. But
thankfully, we have a mute button, so we're all very quick with that mute button, and we sit there and, you know, mute it and laugh and then unmute it. And
well, you see, the bad thing about our phone system though was that it was always hot. It recorded everything. Like we could pick up the phone and not even be on the line talking to somebody, and it would record. And
oh wow,
yeah, we would have new people that would come in, and we would tell them, you need to be careful with what you say, especially right when you go to hang up, because it's recording.
It's recording still.
Yeah. And they're like, no, it's not. And I'm like, okay. And I would just pick up the receiver and hold it up or hold it, you know, towards them and say, start talking, start saying anything. And they would say a couple things. And then I would hit the playback and there it was, like, oh, are you serious? It records everything. I'm like, yeah, you need to be careful. Because yes. It will pick it all up. Oh man, that person with the only the red boots, rather bold, very bold.
Yeah, you know, though, since then I've gotten some that just top it, and you just sit there and you're like shake your head and just wonder about people some days.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, that's job security.
Very much.
You know, you will always have a job.
Exactly.
So how about some of the calls that shocked you? What are some calls that really shocked you or you know, left an impact on you?
Shocked me, like in a good way or in a bad way?
You know, we can go either way. We don't have to make this a Debbie Downer. We can go either way. However you want, you know, any call that really... something that stuck with you, really.
One that has stuck with me, and I use it a lot of times when I'm training people about listening, especially on 911 disconnects or on open lines when you get people who are talking. Mm-hmm. Listening to what they say. This one, we had report of a stolen vehicle over in one of the areas of town, and the person who stole the vehicle called in and was on an open line with us and telling us without him knowing exactly where he was. And
what?
Even talking about the fact of how he stole this vehicle. So, you know, he's telling us exactly what street he's turning on, and he's arguing back and forth with the other person in the vehicle. And she's telling him that, you know, what you did was wrong. You need to go turn yourself in. And they're just going back and forth. Wow. Well, he mentioned where they were headed. So we had officers waiting for them at that location. So that was one of the things that just kind of always sticks with me with, you know, when people talk, listen, you know, it's easy when you have an open line, be not really concerned about it and hang up too quick.
Right.
But sometimes you can really find out a lot of stuff by just listening.
Oh yeah, exactly. And yeah, you were able to find all that information. Oh man, I wish I could have been there just to see their face.
You know, it was priceless. We asked the officers after, and they were shocked. They were, you know, even asked us, "How did you know?" Well, turns out his phone pocket dialed us.
Oh man, what are the odds?
And he never even knew.
Oh, that's the best. That's awesome when a call comes together like that. And you get to listen to them and then call back, or, you know, just like what happened with yours. That's the coolest. I had a call once. It doesn't compare to the awesomeness of what you just told me, but just listening, you know, the similarity there in that is that there was a pocket dial that I got, and it was two guys that were talking about their Xbox game, Halo. And they're like, "Yeah, man, I can't get it to work. I don't know what's going on." And I'm laughing. They couldn't hear me laughing, but I was laughing because of how upset they were that their game was not working. Like, they really wanted to play that game. And then they hung up. So I called them back, and they answer. And, you know, I said, "This is Ricardo with Elegant 911. I said, I just got a hang up call from your cell phone. Is everything all right?" And they said, oh, yeah, I'm so sorry, man. I must have butt dialed you. And I was like, oh, no, it's fine. And you know, I went through the motions and stuff. And I said, hey, by the way, did you get your Halo game to work? And they just started laughing and laughing. They're like, oh, man, he hurt us. And they're like, no, we decided to play a different game. I was like, well, sorry about your luck, fella. Have a good one.
It's amazing some of the things you hear when people pocket dial.
Yeah.
It really is.
It's nuts. How about the training? Because you were telling me earlier that that you train other dispatchers. How did you get involved with that?
I was asked to train. Just to give you a little bit of my history.
Sure.
I have taught in the past. I was a school teacher for a year. And then I also homeschool my own kids. So I love to teach. And it doesn't matter what I'm doing. I love to share with people what I know. Sometimes that's not a lot, but it's just a little bit. Mm-hmm. So when I finished and got through the program, my administrator approached me about going through the CTO program. Our CTOs go through the APCO training for CTO training so that we're all certified. And it's really that program helped me understand a little bit about how to train. Since then, I've had several trainees and have just really, really enjoyed sharing with them not only how to do it and make it easier for them and make them better, but also show them the love of taking care of our officers and our fire department.
Nice. That's always good because they're like our second family. They're the ones that we're watching out there.
They really are. And just watching, you know, as the joy on their face, as they start to conquer the radio and conquer their fear of it. And you can see it in their eyes and they start getting excited when something fun starts happening. And,
right.
You know, it's fun to watch that.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, like imagining it right now, what you're saying, it takes me back to when I first started and I was doing stuff like that. And you can always tell when someone has a high priority complaint by the way they type.
Yes, they type louder.
Yeah, yeah. They just start smashing buttons. They're like, uh-oh, they got something. You can tell.
Exactly.
Now, did you have any specific expectations or anything of being a trainer? And did any of that change after the first couple trainees that you had?
I think a lot of the expectations on being a trainer were ones that I set for myself. I tend to push myself to be a perfectionist, which is not good, but sometimes it can benefit me as well. Mm-hmm. And when I went into being a trainer, I wanted to be the best trainer possible. But at the same time, I was scared to death because I didn't feel like I knew a lot. So it drove me to go learn more so that I can know what I needed to know to pass on to the other person. You know, it made me go into policy and study the policies and know, okay, what does policy say about this?
Right.
You know, exactly how am I supposed to do this? And it made me more confident in my job, preparing for it to share with them. I don't know if that makes sense or not.
No, it does. Yeah. Yeah. Because I mean, it's hard to train on stuff that you don't know. So if, I guess an example for me too is that when I've gone into to train people on our Text for 911 program, I've gone in and whenever I introduce myself, I make sure to say before this, I also worked in dispatch for 13 years. So I know exactly what you're going through because I was told by a dispatcher once that it's a good thing that you come from where we come from because it would be completely different if you were just some tech guy trying to do it.
They're going
to
have no confidence in you and in your training.
Right, exactly. So I know exactly what you mean by wanting to do all this other stuff first so that you can show them in that sense.
Right. And, you know, one of the biggest things too I've learned is, you know, I'm not going to let my trainee fail. And that's why I tell them, I'm here to make you better. I'm not here to make you fail. I'm here to help you and do my best that I can. you know, my first responsibility is helping you. My second responsibility is making sure those officers go home safe. So I'm not going to let you do anything that's going to put their lives in jeopardy.
Right.
And that's what I tell them, you know, as we sit down and we start learning.
No, that's good. That's good that you throw it out there and you let them know, you know, exactly what's going to be going on. So what's different from training new dispatchers now as opposed to when you started? Is there any difference or at all, or are the new hires different?
Well, when I first started, our training program was in the transition phase. Our administrator was trying to get everything credited. And as far as our training, mm-hmm. we were still using the paper DORs, and we sit there and our trainer would write out everything on the paper.
Yeah.
Papers got lost. It got shuffled. It was a mess. Now everything is on the computer, so it makes it much easier. Mm-hmm. We're using the Agency 360 program.
Right.
And it's actually become more streamlined. With the phases, and I don't know how to explain it. You know, we have a training outline so mm-hmm. that exactly the trainers and the trainees know what to follow. The new dispatchers coming in, I mean, we just got a couple people that just came in, but they've already had previous experience. So for them, you know, it was a lot easier jumping into the training program.
Right. Oh, that's always good.
Right. And being only there for 3 years, I don't see a whole lot of difference between when I started and when they started, except for our training program being changed.
Nice. Well, so then how, let's see, you kind of explained it already with this question I was going to ask you, but how exactly has the software from Agency 360 helped you guys out with that training program? Just that it's streamlined it more from the usual DORs that are written out in paper form, and you can, you know, keep track of them more, or how else has it helped you guys out?
Well, one of the things that I really like is, well, first of all, I can start the DOR at the beginning of the shift mm-hmm. and save it. So I can keep comments going all day long or all shift long about what's going on that day. So I don't have to sit there and try to write everything down and try to remember. And it's all, you know, I can just keep it going.
Right. No, that's always good.
it's a huge plus for me. Another thing too is the comments are under each section. You know, you might have a section on multitasking, and then there's a section to put all the comments right under there. So, and then if you forget, well, what exactly are they looking for under multitasking? There's a little question mark button. You can click on that, and that will show you exactly what our administrator wants to see in the multitasking section. You can go back and look at previous DORs. So if I'm getting a trainer or a trainee from another trainer, mm-hmm. I can go back and look at the DORs and the comments that they've made and see, okay, this is where they need to improve. This is what they've been working on. So I know exactly where they're at when I'm getting them. So that kind of helps me out a lot too. And then there's been times when I've had to look back and pull statistics. Okay, this is how much radio time they've had on this channel. This is how many hours they've had on that channel. And it's really easy for my supervisor to pull up those statistics for me so that I can just gather it for whatever, you know, if I'm sending a memo to somebody or right. whatever I need to do.
Man, this thing sounds pretty awesome, because I know when I was, you know, helping train and stuff, we had this book that just had everything, you know, like three hole punch, just put them in there. And right. that's how we kept track of them. But it wasn't easy, you know, trying to go back through those, because there would always be a bunch of stuff, you know, something would happen and we're like, did that happen already? And I would got to look for it. And it was a huge pain in the butt, but
right.
it sounds like you guys got it pretty easy. It sounds pretty awesome.
It makes it really nice. Plus I can do things like attach documents to it. Mm-hmm. So say maybe they took a 10 code test. I can attach it to their DOR. So that it stays with everything. Also, there's a place on there for the trainee to make comments back as to what they think about the DOR, about the CTO's comments. And then ours is set up where our supervisor of the shift has to sign off on them, and they can also make any comments that they need to in the DOR.
Wow.
So not only do we have the DOR set up, we also have a checklist, a training checklist that we can go in and check off. Okay, you know what? We've explained this to this person. We've explained the basics of asking your five W's. We've explained the basics of, you know, including weapon information. Okay, now not only have we explained it, we've demonstrated it. Okay, now we've observed it. So you can see what's been covered, what days. So they can't come back to you and say, well, nobody ever told me that.
Right. Yeah.
Well, yes, we have, because it's right here.
Yeah. Easy, Jack. I got it right here. Check it out.
Exactly.
That's awesome. Well, and then with all the stuff that you've been doing with training, what do you find are the most common mistakes amongst trainers?
I think probably the most common mistake is you expect the trainee to be where you are.
Right.
It's easy to forget that you've been dispatching for several years. You're comfortable with it. You know, you can sit down on the radio and you can multitask. You can type, you can talk, do it, all the other things, and eat all the same time.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And you expect them to be able to jump down on the radio and do that right away. And you have to sometimes remember, oh no, okay, I need to take a step back, slow down, and take it slowly with them. Take it step by step. Let them get acclimated.
Right.
And I think another, probably a big one that I find myself struggling with is I expect them sometimes to do it my way.
Oh,
and
man.
I just back and say, no, you know what? There's many ways to do it.
Yeah.
As long as they're accomplishing the task correctly, you know, I don't need to be as picky.
Right, exactly. And I was going to say that same thing, that was probably, if not one of yours, I was going to mention it, because that exact same thing happened to me when I was training at my last PSAP. I had three different trainers, and it was pretty much the way you were saying, you know, you go from phones to NCIC, and then radios. And then there's a shadow phase where they're just there, you know, watching you and stuff. But with two of the trainers, that was one of the things, was that, you know, you're supposed to be doing it this way, which was their way. And I was like, well, I found a way to do it myself that's a lot faster than the way you're doing it. No, you know, you got to do it. And I was getting marked down for it. And then another trainer was doing the same thing. And I had to go in and talk to the assistant director to figure this out, because I mean, it was getting to the point where I just wanted to be done. I was like, this sucks. I was like, you guys, they're messing this stuff up. And I found a way to do it. And, you know, they're not digging it. So we got to figure something out here. So I'm glad you brought that up, because, you know, that is definitely, you know, something there that people have to watch out for.
Well, and lately, one of the things that I found really helps is I'll show them, okay, you know what? Let me show you. This is how I do it. There's other ways to do it. Pick the way that feels comfortable, but I want to show you the way I've learned to do it. And I find they're a lot more receptive to trying it, because you're not sitting there saying, well, the other trainer told you wrong. You need to do it this way.
Right.
And, you know, so it also causes a lot of conflict between the actual CTOs. Well, I don't see why they can't use the command line. Well, I don't see why they can use the mouse, you know, over little trivial things that really don't need to be an issue.
Right. Oh man. Yeah. I didn't become a full CTO. When I was doing my, or helping out with the training, we were down a lot of dispatchers. So everyone had to train. I enjoyed it, but I had so much other stuff that was going on too, that I didn't get a chance to actually go through, the entire program so that I could be an actual CTO. But with everything I was doing and then becoming supervisor, I was pretty much doing it anyway. I just didn't have, you know, the title or anything. Do you have any advice for, you know, an agency refreshing their new training program? And is there anything that you wish you would have known before you kind of learned the hard way? Was there anything like that?
I think, any agency that's looking at their training program needs to first realize that it's going to take time to train dispatchers. Don't expect them to come out on the floor and know how to do it right away, especially nowadays. I mean, there's so many complex programs that we're using. You know, we're sitting there with, you know, six different monitors. it's overwhelming, and people want them to be trained, you know, up within 2-3 months, and then push them out onto the floor and say, okay, well, you know the basics, you're good.
And yeah,
I think that causes a lot of burnout, and people get scared and they start making mistakes and panic and then end up quitting.
I've definitely seen that happen before.
Unfortunately, it's something that I've been seeing a lot.
See, and that's always bad, because then, you know, you do that, you get somebody, you pretty much push them through the entire training process, and you figure, yeah, you got the basics, you're good to go. You'll learn as you go along. And, yeah, they take that first call, and then, you know, they either freeze up or it's like, what the heck is going on?
Right.
So, yeah, it's crazy. I know exactly what you mean. So going into the wrap up of this episode, I've got a question for you. See what you got for me here.
Okay.
So why do you think it's important to have a CTO program today? And how do you think it's going to evolve in the future? Like training programs.
I think really the training programs are just going to get better and better. Because people are realizing over the years the importance of training the dispatcher, because they're the first line. They're the ones that actually communicate with the people out in the streets. They're the ones who take the information. And a lot of times we're the ones who actually can calm down and diffuse the situation before the officers even get there. So I think people are starting to see the importance of good training for the dispatchers. Which I'm thankful for, because, you know, our agency has seen that and seen that, you know, we have to train them so that they know what to do. They know how to help the person, not just for liability reasons, but also for the public safety. I think we're just going to keep streamlining it until it gets to exactly what works. And I mean, it's kind of hard to say though, because not one way of training doesn't work for all people. So, you know, everybody's different. People learn different.
Right. Exactly. And that's why, you know, not only with the training programs, but we have people like you who can relate and do so much stuff that when it evolves, I mean, like you were saying before, you're trying to learn as much stuff as you can so that you can help your trainees, which is awesome. So you, in a sense, are evolving with that program as well.
Hopefully, that's my goal. But I think, too, as time goes on and technology, dispatch is just becoming more and more, I don't want to say complicated, but it is. You know, we're looking at, you know, text to 911. Who thought years ago we would have text to 911?
Right, yeah. And a lot of people thinking it should have been here already. It's like, well, there's a lot more to it than you think.
Right. And, you know, you're already talking to people about having video chat 911.
Oh, man.
And things like that. So as technology evolves, so is dispatch going to evolve. And with that, the training has to evolve, too.
Right. It's going to be like Google Glass. You guys are going to be wearing headsets, and you're going to be able to watch all the stuff that's going on. Oh, man, that's going to be nuts.
That will be nuts.
Yeah, that whole training program for that is going to be even more crazy. Oh, man. Well, this was a lot of fun. Thank you very much, Teresa, for being on the show.
Thank you.
This was a good time. For those that are listening to the episode, if you want to be a guest on the show or you have any comments or questions at all, you can email us, and that's WTTpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter, and that's @901podcast. You can also find us on Facebook, and make sure to like us. That is facebook.com/withinthetrenchespodcast. And this episode can be heard and available 24/7 on Stitcher Radio, iTunes, SoundCloud, and thejabberlog.com. And once again, from the beginning all the way up till now, our sponsor for the month of June is Agency 360. So for more information on them, you can contact them, find them at www.agency360.com. And just as a reminder, their customizable web-based solution supports the CTO program and the onboarding of new dispatchers across the country to improve consistency, access, and efficiency in documenting their training. Have a good one, everybody. You just listened to a Code 7 Network podcast. Make sure to check out our sponsor, Agency 360. You can find them at www.agency360.com. Their customizable web-based field training software supports the CTO program and the onboarding of new dispatchers across the country to improve consistency, access, and efficiency in documenting their training. Also, if you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to WTTpodcast@gmail.com.